Too often, I think we start by asking ourselves, what do we want to happen in our experience? Or what do we want to happen to our audience or to our mom at her birthday party? Oh, we want to give them a cake. We want patients to wait less time in the waiting room. We far too frequently start with the activities. But here's the switch that we're going to invite you to make. Start with the feelings and figure out the activities only after.
Welcome to the IDOU Creative Confidence Podcast, a series focused on building your confidence at work to tackle your biggest creative challenges.
Join us as we learn insights and lessons straight from IDEO and today's most impact-oriented design thinking leaders.
Welcome, welcome. We are so excited you can join us.
For those of you who are constant attendees of the IDEOU Creative Confidence webcast, you might be wondering, who are these fools dancing in front of you? Where are your normal hosts, Susan Co? We ate them. Sorry, no more. Just kidding. We're doing something a little bit different today, webcast / podcast takeover. So let me introduce you to the amazing Jenny.
Hello.
Jenny's an experiential designer on IDEO's Playlab team. She is phenomenal at making civic engagement and environmental stewardship. Two things tend to be dry and boring, but are extremely important. Exceptionally fun. Pretty sure she made a roving voting circus.
Cirque du Vote.
An entire festival about that. She's also great at designing apocalypse zombie games to teach you to be prepared for disasters, wedding proposals for her best friends, fancy machines to measure laughter for science, all types of things. So totally a star online with us today.
And also, we've got Olivia here. She's also an experiential designer on the Playlab team, and she creates these incredible experiences that are audio-led called Audio Acid Trips. Highly recommend. And she's the queen of meeting warm-ups. We'll talk more about warm-ups later. And she's just really great at designing dinner parties, ways to make strangers fall in love. She's obsessed with time machines and an all-around gem of a human to be around. So I'm delighted to be here with her. And yeah, as we mentioned, we are both experiential designers in the Playlab. So let's break that down and talk about a little bit what that means. For those of you who might be unfamiliar, the Playlab is a team at IDEO that focuses on designing for engagement and for fun. We've got a team of merry weirdos comprised of toy designers, game designers, industrial designers, mechanical engineers, interaction designers, software designers, and you guessed it, experiential designers. So half the time, we're consulting with clients, helping them leverage the power of play design to improve things like healthcare or education or org structures or products or services or training programs, you name it. And then the other half of the time, we're coming up with wacky ideas and licensing those ideas to toy and entertainment companies.
Wow, Jenny, sounds like chaos.
Well, it is. It is total chaos, but it's the best kind of chaos, which is never boring. You know, one day we might be working with a national park to figure out how to reduce traffic without building more roads. So that obviously includes coming up with ideas on how to make public transportation and carpooling more fun and desirable. But then we'll like switch gears, and another day we're brainstorming and building prototypes for new hit toys and games, which also means our team gets to specialize in doing research and co-creation with kids and families, which is so much fun. So that's about the Playlab, but I think, Olivia, we need to take a moment and explain what experiential design is.
Indeed we do. So we told you we are experiential designers. The way that we define that experience design as a craft is the crafting of distinct and memorable moments in time. So experiential designers are not just designing what people might do within that time frame, but really designing for what people might feel. And we think about it as transformation? How do you create a time-bounded experience that changes someone in some way? And for us, play is a huge part of that. And that is why we sit in the Play Lab, because we see play as one key way to engage people's creativity so that they become active rather than passive participants in experiences. And play is how we make moments enjoyable and sticky and impactful. And if your experience sucks and is no fun at all, everyone's going to leave and you're not going to have the impact you want with it. Okay, Jenny, can you give us a quick list of some favorite experiential design things that you have been a part of recently?
I would love to. All right, so last year, Rithima Ramesh, who's an amazing game designer on our team, she and I helped to design a cyber attack-themed Escape the Room game for mayors. You know, something they could play through and learn experientially how to prevent cyber attacks in their city. Another example, and this is not something that I got to work on, but someone else, some other folks in our team, and this was a few years ago, we designed a real-world magic school bus, literally a magical school bus, to get fourth graders stoked on STEM education. So our team converted a coach tour bus into an immersive spaceship experience so students could hop on, fly to Mars, save the Curiosity rover through a series of tablet games, and then come back to a really awesome curriculum back in their classroom. So those are just two examples. Not all experiential design projects have some sort of game component, but because we're from the Play Lab, we definitely champion playfulness in everything that we design. All right, audience, if you're here with us, it's probably because you want to design an experience in the future, or you've simply participated in less than awesome experiences in the past and thought, huh, I wonder if that could have been better. Well, it probably could have, and today we're going to talk about how you're going to change that.
All right, so to kick us off and just to prime your brains, we'd like to invite you to think about an experience. Remember, something time-bound, you had in the past 6 months that you wish had been better. Maybe it was like outright bad, or maybe it was just kind of meh, just kind of blah. What wasn't great about it? Name one or two things. We'll kick you off with some examples of our own. Jenny, what about you?
So in the last 6 months, I attended a virtual climate conference, and the subject matter was super interesting and obviously very, very, very important. But the overall experience was kind of dry, and I found myself multitasking at one point and getting kind of distracted. So that's mine. What about you?
I got my first COVID vaccine last week, which—
Congratulations.
Yes, thank you. Was amazing. And then going back into the waiting room, I was so elated, and the waiting room was just so, it did not match my internal state of experience. There was just such dissonance in kind of the boring, blah, quiet, somber space and my internal feelings. All right, so we are here to equip you with some tips and tools to make those experiences better for yourselves and for others. No need to be scribbling furious notes, especially if you are multitasking or grocery shopping. We have made you a snazzy little workbook that you can follow along and use after.
And for those who are listening later, this will be available in the blog post.
Yes, pod listeners, we hear you. You hear us. We're all here together.
We got you. All right. So here's what we're talking about today. Over the years, our team has developed a lot of these internal tips and tools for experiential design, you know, building the plane as we fly it. But today, we're just going to talk about four things. Just it's a taster menu that we think will help you immediately make any experience better. So for starters, we recommend you focus on 1, your audience, 2, your opening moment, 3, your closing moment, and 4, most of all, we recommend you prototype your experience before you roll it out. All right, so let's get started. Olivia, why is it important to start with your audience before designing anything else?
All right. So as we said, we are talking about transformational experiences, ones where people are changed in some way. And it is exceptionally hard to inspire a change in someone when you don't know anything about them. Now, quick pause. When we talk about change, know that this could be as small as having them understand something new about themselves or others, or moving them from a headspace of anxiety to calm. Or, of course, you know, total identity transformation, but, you know, start small. Here's the thing, though. You can't manifest transformations without feelings, because a transformation is about someone's internal state. And you can't tell someone to feel something. I can't just say, you know, Jenny, feel excited now, please. I have to create the conditions and the moments that are going to inspire that feeling within you. And for each of the yous out there, that is going to be different. So here's our hunch, is that those badly designed and those meh experiences, it wasn't just, you know, the crappy hors d'oeuvres or the technical problems or the snooze fest that made it bad. It's that at its core, it maybe wasn't really designed with you in mind.
Right. So when you're thinking about your audience, here are three things to ask yourself just to get a better sense of who they are. The first one, who are they to one another? So start to think through, do they know each other? Do they not know each other? Are there power dynamics or roles that will kind of set the stage for how they might interact with each other? The second thing you want to ask, why are they there? Why did they come? What are their expectations for this experience? What are their motivations? Maybe what are their incoming needs? And then the third thing that you want to ask yourself, what do you want them to feel? And again, Olivia mentioned this shift. All experiences that are worth their salt are transformative in some way. So get clear on what you think that shift could be. So, Olivia, you designed an awesome experience recently that I had the deep pleasure of being a part of. Can you walk us through what this was and how you thought through these questions?
Absolutely. So this past month, I designed a portfolio review for the consultants on our PlayLab team, a series of moments for us to come together and look at the past year of work. And so we started first by asking ourselves, who is the audience of this experience? And then it made us ask, okay, should we invite the toy inventors? We knew the consultants were core on our team, but the toy inventors? Or Brendan Boyle, who leads the studio at the partner level, aka the boss, other ideoers we've worked with on projects. We could even invite the ones we really want to collaborate with this year. We could invite our client partners, famous game designers, Beyonce. As you can see, though it might start clear, it gets murky so quickly. So we had to make some choices.
And you made some awesome choices, by the way. So props to you. I'm going to walk through the choices that you made because we debriefed it afterwards. The first question of who is this audience to one another? And you made the call, you and your awesome team that created this experience. We were going to keep it to our core consulting team and invite Brendan. And what that did was it allowed this meeting to be really intimate and low pressure. So we could show up without stress or the need to kind of like show off and perform, which we do in a lot of other meetings. This was not one of them. And then the second question, why are they, us, we, there? Now, for us, this is the one time of year where all of the consultants really get to come together in one space. As we mentioned before, it's normally chaos. We're all running around doing ridiculous things elsewhere. So we only really vaguely know what other folks on our team are working on at any given time. So we often come to these annual reviews with a deep curiosity. And then you also asked yourself what you wanted us to feel. And I can attest that we felt this way. And those things were, you wanted us to feel seen and appreciated for all of the hard work that we put in and how intense and overwhelming this last year had been. You wanted us to feel inspired. You wanted us to feel connected, and you wanted us to feel delighted. So you did that. How did you do that?
Glad to hear that we made it through. Too often, I think we start by asking ourselves, what do we want to happen in our experience? Or what do we want to happen to our audience or to our mom at her birthday party? Oh, we want to give them a cake. You know, we want the vice president to choose the best idea. We want patients to wait less time in the waiting room. We far too frequently start with the activities. But here's the switch that we're going to invite you to make. start with the feelings and figure out the activities only after. We realized that what we really wanted to do was acknowledge the messiness and the challenge of this year and joyfully celebrate one another for how we'd grown within the context of that mess. So with that in mind, we decided to theme the portfolio review the Jackson Potluck, honoring having thrown a whole lot of paint at the wall this year, and with a vibe of bring what you've got, even if it's half-baked, and we'll make magic out of it together. So that's where we started. We started with the feelings, moved to the theme, and then we got to the activities. So a little bit of a taster of what that looked like.
These were so fun.
A week before, we sent everyone glow-in-the-dark body paint and a black light and instructed them to make an artistic portrait of themselves. We gave them a few prompts and templates to write about and reflect on their various projects this year. We made the choice to not only include client work, but also personal projects, things that were in their passion zones outside of work. We didn't start by saying, you know, what we want people to do is build a virtual shrimp cocktail next to someone's beautifully painted, you know, neon face.
Although that is exactly what
that's exactly what we did have them do. We started out by thinking about how we wanted them to feel. And we knew this particular group was ready to get weird. And so that's how we got there.
Right. So that magically unforgettable experience wouldn't have happened if you didn't take time to think about us, your audience, and understand what we needed from the moment, which is why you really just have to start there before you make anything.
Hey there, it's Ko here. I hope you're enjoying the conversation. Are you curious to know a bit more about IDOU? We're an online school where anyone can solve anything creatively. If you'd like to learn to craft more human-centered presentations, I'd love for you to join our course, Impactful Presentations. In it, you will learn how to deliver presentations that spark a shift in beliefs, how to create a meaningful connection with your audience, and my favorite, you'll be able to expand your skills by practicing a range of unique presentation methods. Check it out at idou.com/present. Now, back to the conversation.
So, let's talk about the second tip, designing for the welcome moment. Why is this so important, Olivia? Please break it down.
All right. The beginning of the experience is such an opportunity to set the tone and the rules of engagement. It demonstrates to the people that you've invited or who are included what the experience is going to be all about. And it helps people transition in from wherever it was they were coming from, physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally. And in the world of play and game design, there's a term for this, which is called entering the magic circle.
Right. So when you're thinking about the welcome moment or the magic circle, here are a couple of questions we like to ask ourselves. First, how might you help your audience feel included and then connected to one another? And then second, how do you give that opening moment pizzazz, but with purpose? So we'll explain what we mean in the form of a few examples. Olivia, why don't you take the first one? What's an example of an opening moment that made people feel included, connected, et cetera?
Amazing. So I have two dear, dear friends named David and Alex. And 2 years ago, they got married. And a wedding is such an opportunity to bring, you know, two communities together and to make them all feel like family, not just to you, but to each other as well. But I know I have been to a number of weddings, you know, or conferences or events or whatever, where you just, that opening moment, that like first cocktail party, whatever it is, feels so uncomfortable. You feel like you don't belong, you don't know what to do or where to sit or who to talk to about what. So here is what they did. They had a Friday reception for this weekend wedding. And when you arrived, there was a small bag with your name on it at the entrance. Inside was a handwritten welcome note. Oh my goodness, they actually took the time to handwrite all of these. Felt so cared for. A silly hat to wear. So that made me feel like, wow, we're so cute and matching, and I'm clearly a part of this. Like, there's something that ties us all together. And a few small paper cards. And each card had a fun fact that they had curated about someone else at the wedding. And it was your mission during that reception to find out and meet the person whose fun fact that was. It was a game they had created to grease the gears, to give you a reason to introduce yourself, a question to get started. And it made us all feel so seen by one another because now these people at the wedding know this like kind of deep, surprising thing about me, but also by David and Alex, that they were able to come up with these for all, you know, 200 people at their wedding, prove they knew something highly specific and deep, like deep relationship with each of us. And it set the tone for the rest of the wedding, that this was about deepening relationships. This was about getting beyond, you know, love this wedding, isn't it so great? Love David and Alex, but actually getting to know one another in a meaningful way. All right, Jenny, over to you. Let's take that second question, pizzazz with purpose. Can you talk us through an opening moment that really delivered on that?
Oh, I can. So last year, Matt Callahan, shout out to Matt, who is an awesome design researcher and toy designer on our team, he and I worked on a project to help an entrepreneur explore an idea around oral health for families. And we knew that this entrepreneur had to pitch their idea in front of some very serious investors. And we also knew for the investors to understand the value of that idea, they really had to understand some key insights we surfaced from the research. But rather than listing those insights out on like slides with bullet points, we created an opening moment. So the night before the presentation, we sent out this very cryptic, kind of mysterious email to the stakeholders who were attending that said, "Hello, here are some things you need to do to prepare for tomorrow. Please have a toothbrush and a cup of water at hand, and also bring a sweet treat of your choice, ideally chocolate, ice cream, or a cookie, but banana, berries, or coffee will work in a pinch." But yes, this was a 10 a.m. presentation. I'm not sure if anyone came with ice cream, but it was recommended. So when they got here, or when they got to the presentation, we started by explaining that we learned from the research that there was one way, only one way, to tell by the way someone brushes if they're at higher risk of cavities. And then we told the very important people in this meeting that they were about to compete in a toothbrushing Olympics, and we would judge their performance and be able to tell who might get cavities first. So everyone took a big bite of their thing that was sweet. They dipped their toothbrush in the water and they started brushing furiously on Zoom. And by the way, we obviously recorded that moment and made a really funny GIF, which we shared later as a thank you. But that was, you know, the party favor. But we ended the brushing competition, and instead of handing out prizes or cavities, we said, you know what? Just kidding. There is no one way to tell if someone is more at risk. Turns out it's multifactorial. But the biggest thing that we learned from our oral health research is that turns out the mouth is a very emotional place. And maybe you all felt a little bit of that right now. Maybe some of you felt self-conscious, fear of being judged for your toothbrushing performance. Or, I don't know, maybe some of you felt overly confident. You could feel very strong in your brushing. But whatever you felt, it turns out you are not alone, because people feel all sorts of things about their mouth, from fear to pride to confusion to shame. And that is why the solution you're about to hear is set up to address not only these multifactorial risks for cavities, but also all of these emotions. So we designed that opening moment because we didn't just want to see a bunch of important people brushing fast, although that was fun. We wanted to knock them off guard and have them walk into that meeting really curious. And then we wanted them to feel something, either bad or good, so that our entrepreneur could drive home their point. So yes, there was pizzazz, but it was for a real purpose. All right, Olivia, I think it's time for tip number three, designing for ending moments. Why is this important?
All right. So Chip and Dan Heath wrote an amazing book called The Power of Moments. Would strongly recommend it. And in that, they talk about something called peak end theory. So the way that we remember an experience is not a net average of all of the microseconds that it took, but rather it's really defined by the standout moments, both good and bad. As experienced designers, we know that you can't design for every second. And good news for all of us is that you actually don't need to. We urge you to design your ending. Putting your energy in here, it's so worth it. We know the focus is so often on the middle bits, what feels like the meat of the experience or the presentation or whatever it is. And so often we leave those kind of bookends to last thoughts, if at all. But we swear starts and ends are where to invest.
Yes. So here are the things that you want to keep in mind for the ending. How could you close the loop? You know, how can you return? And the reason why this is important is that our human brains love pattern finding. I mean, it literally is what has kept us alive and evolving, the fact that our brain can find patterns. And when we see a pattern, it's so satisfying. It feels like a puzzle piece falling into place. And that pattern or that loop that you're closing, it could be like bringing back a joke that you started at the beginning of your experience or a question or a reference. Or it could literally be having the audience come back to the same physical space in which the experience began. So start thinking about how you want to close the loop, how you want to return. And then the second thing you want to ask yourself about the closing moment, how can you honor what has been accomplished in that experience or celebrate a transformation during that experience? And one way we love to do this, whether it's in meetings or conferences or dinner parties, is through gratitude. You know, you can have people share what was meaningful to them or one thing that they'll take away or one thing they appreciated about someone else who was there. Because not only does it help people kind of cement the value of this shared experience, but it's also like instant warm, fuzzy feelings, which is a great way to close any experience.
All right, Jenny, can you give us an example?
Yes. All right. So recently, I worked on an accelerator program for scientists across the country who were working on projects leveraging AI and quantum technologies to address the nation's most pressing challenges related to climate change, water scarcity, infrastructure management, like really, really important stuff. And I joined the faculty of this program, and I was a part of the team that was responsible for designing the interactive workshops that helped these scientists apply design thinking to their respective projects. So halfway through this multi-month program, we led the scientists in this guided visualization about how their work would make an impact in the future. And we called this a séance for science. And we had them, at the end of it, write down a headline that would grace the cover of a newspaper in 10 years that captured the essence of their success. Now, fast forward to the end of the program, a few months later, unbeknownst to the scientists, we had Photoshopped all of their headlines into news articles. So during the closing session, we created the slideshow of their headlines, and we played this really emotional kind of orchestral music as the team shared our gratitude for getting the opportunity to support them as they did this incredible, life-saving work. And we didn't plan this part, but all of a sudden they all started pouring their gratitude into the chat. And it was, it was the best. Tears were shed. They may have been mine, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't just me. And yeah, you know, so here we honored their accomplishments. We shared our gratitude and we closed that loop in a really satisfying way, that loop of the headline. Now, how do you design for skeptics? How do you design for people who may not be interested in getting weird or silly or it may turn them off? So those same people might be wondering, well, how the heck did you get scientists to do seances with you? And I would refer you back to tip number one, know your audience. And tip number two, design for your opening moments. So we knew our audience are respective scientists that are expected to do important things and not waste any time, which is why the séance for science was not in the opening moment. I mean, can you imagine if we started off this program like, hello, we're IDEO, let's all close our eyes and have a séance for science? I mean, it would have been a disaster. But we designed the previous experiences to help us build credibility, connection, trust. And so by the time we got to the mid part of the program, that worked. Now, don't be fooled. This stuff does not come out of our heads and into the world like flawlessly, right? Like we have terrible ideas all the time that fall completely flat. And the reason why we get away with it is that we prototype first, cut the terrible ideas before they make it to the final experience. Which brings us to the fourth thing we want to share, and that is a set of tools for prototyping experiences.
Yes. So in order to get there, the thing we have to do is prototype and practice extremely badly. This is the most important part. We are not doing this well. So maybe you are used to prototyping and that's a familiar part of your process. You've done it for services or products. But what about for your meetings or for your birthday parties? Too often, and yes, we know this from personal experience, we don't plan the details. And remember, we're not saying in the first place that you should plan out everything. But too often we don't do kind of extensive planning. That is one issue. But the other side of that coin is actually we overplan. We plan and plan and plan. And the day before the experience, maybe we talk through the plan one last time. But we never actually play through it. We don't live it. And we often get ourselves so far into the details that by the time, even if we did play through it and realized it was bad, we wouldn't have the time or the energy or the resources to change it. So here's our urging. Do some planning of the moments that matter. Focus on those. But then don't just plan it, play it. Practice it badly. There is a method to this madness. Jenny, how do we do this?
Okay, so like we said, experiential design is an emerging discipline at IDEO. So we've been fumbling around for a bit figuring all of this out, but we started to create this sequence of tools for our experience prototypes that seem to serve us well. Step one, we do what's called a brain dump. So you bring everyone together who might be helping to create this experience, or if it's just you, you do it solo, and you throw all of your ideas into your tool of choice. It could be a notebook, it could be Google Docs, Miro, Notion, you call it, whatever. Basically, what you're doing here is you're building an outline for what could happen in this experience in the allotted time that you have. So you could write down, all right, we want a welcome moment, and then we want an announcement, and then we want to do an activity, and maybe there's a presentation. Oh, and don't forget a surprise and a closing moment. Boom, there's your brain dump. Step two, you turn that into a run of show. That term may be familiar to the event planners out there. I used to work in nightlife many, many moons ago, and I loved my run of shows. So for those of you who are unfamiliar with this concept, the way that I like to prepare a run of show is fleshing out the various ideas that you came up with in your brain dump. You assign a person or two to be in charge of that piece, and then you guesstimate how much time each of these things will take. And by the way, I like to call these things chunklets, like experience chunklets. So, for example, in the run of show, you say, all right, the welcome moment chunklet. Well, Takashi's going to take that. It's going to take maybe like 30 seconds. Then the announcement chunklet, Michelle's on it. It'll take her maybe 1 minute. For the activity chunklet, that's Olivia and Rhythma. They definitely need like at least 10 minutes. For the presentation, that's Nikolai. That's like 5 minutes. And for the surprise, duh, obviously Ricky's on it. That's 3 minutes. But Olivia and Jenny are going to work on the closing moment, and that'll be like 2 seconds. So after you've agreed on the first draft of your run of show, you as a team go heads down and divvy and rock. And by the way, when I say divvy and rock, I'm trying to remove phrases like divide and conquer from my vocabulary. I'm trying to like demilitarize my vocabulary. So you're going to hear me say divvy and rock often. So this is when you divvy and rock. And everyone thinks through their chunklet and how they want it to go. Now, step three, you practice. And we call these V-Berts, P-Gerts, and Yogurts. V-Bert stands for very bad run-through. And this is where you make everyone do their thing, like pretend it's the actual experience, and you run through what you're going to say and do, and you time yourself. And the timing yourself is important because you might have to go back and update the run of show. Like, let's say Michelle actually needs 5 minutes for her announcement, which means Ricky and Olivia and I, we need to chisel our chunklets to make more space. So after a V-Bert or two, then you do a P-Gert, aka a pretty good run through. And maybe you invite other people and you see how they feel about it. After that might come a yogurt, which stands for yes, outstandingly great run through. But don't worry, no one actually ever gets to yogurts, Olivia and I included. So if you do like 1 to 2 V-Birts and 1 P-Girt before your experience, you are doing great. I mean, you are way ahead of the game. So that is the set of tools and the sequence. And don't worry if that feels like a blur. We've captured all of that in the toolkit to remind you later of what you do step by step.
And we will also share with you the blooper reel of our own V-Birts, P-Girts, run of show, all of that coming at you behind the scenes live on the blog. So check it out later for full embarrassment.
Our P-Girts and V-Birts were truly atrocious, which means, and that's a good sign. It means you're directionally correct.
Okay, we know we're coming up on time, but quick review of what we talked about today. Start with your humans. Who are you designing this experience for? Really strive to understand what is important to them. Prioritize the moments that matter, like your beginnings and endings and your surprise moments. It's always good to have a surprise moment. And practice, aka prototype, aka faceplant enthusiastically with your V-Birts, P-Girts, and yogurts. All right. Though we would love to stay on the line with you until the end of eternity.
We got to wrap this up.
And endings are important. In order for this experience to have existed, it must end. So don't worry. The best part is every ending is an opportunity for a new beginning.
Wait, we have 2 more things to do though, really quickly. We got to close some loops and we got to end with some gratitude. So closing some loops, thinking about that experience at the very beginning that you thought was like, meh, or could be better designed. We want you to think about any of the tools or tips that we offered and how you might apply it to make that experience better. Olivia, what would you do?
Okay, what my vaccine needed was an ending moment. It needed a celebratory end. I wanted a parade. I wanted
Safely distanced parade.
A safely distanced parade, a confetti cannon. I think that was such an opportunity to end that in a state that really like matched my emotional tenor. Mm-hmm. Jenny, what about you? The climate conference.
Yeah, the climate conference. So before I would have committed to speakers or a program, I would have started prototyping the conference experience format and run a few V-Birts. So, what if it shouldn't be a conference at all, but instead a series of like curated learning circles? I'm also reminded of a few years ago, there was these climate scientists that realized that no one was listening to their work, but everybody was watching videos of people playing Fortnite on YouTube. So they taught themselves Fortnite and they played it together while they talked about their climate work, and they got more views on that than they had in any other context. So I don't know, maybe this climate conference needs to take place in like Animal Crossing or something. The point is, there are so many experiences that happen all the time that could be way better if designed with more intention, more thoughtfulness, and more playfulness. And we believe in you. We know you can do this. So if you have any questions or you want to share with us how it's going, you can get at us, #IDOUPlay. And I think we have some gratitude to share, right, Olivia?
Yeah. So if you got something even moderately useful from this podcast or webcast, it was definitely thanks to the amazing IDOU team who helped make this possible / allowed the clowns to drive this bus for the day. Thank you for letting us take over your webcast and break format a little bit. Michelle and Kren and Shamir and Stephanie, who sat through our meandering and expletive-filled V-Birts and P-Girts. Steph, double shout out for the incredible design of this deck and vision for it that made us giggle very late into the night last night.
Yeah, if you love this deck, it was all Stephanie Sizemore, who's amazing.
A queen.
We're going to dance this one out, so we can't see you. Feel free to join us if you want to.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Creative Confidence from IDOU. Stay up to date on our Creative Confidence conversations and send your questions for our upcoming guests. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, and sign up for our IDOU newsletter at idou.com/cc. Thanks for joining us.